This is the State of Nevada versus the 8th Judicial District, and Mark S. Obermeyer as real party in interest, case number 81158. Are counsel ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Moskal, go ahead.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Thomas Moskal. I represent the State of Nevada in this matter. On February 21st, 2016, the respondent, Mark Obermeyer, rear-ended and killed a bicyclist near the M Resort, and a blood sample was taken 2 hours and 8 minutes after the crash and showed a blood alcohol content of 0.131. At a motion in limine in front of Judge Miley, the state sought to admit that blood alcohol content result and expert testimony in the form of a Widmark calculation, which requires three variables, the blood alcohol content result, the weight, and the gender of the defendant. And with those three variables being known, you can calculate the amount of pre-collision consumption that had to have taken place. And Judge Miley ruled that the blood alcohol content was excluded by statute because of the two-hour rule, which is a theory of liability. And so today,
Mr. Moskal, yes. I have a question, just jumping right in. I have a question to clarify the record, because the respondent's brief said that you abandoned the theory of the per se violation. And it kind of is unclear in the transcript. It looks like, and I just want to be sure, it looks like you are still going under both theories of impairment and per se for this writ. But
that's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so their statement in their brief that you've abandoned the per se violation is incorrect. Is that correct?
Yeah, that statement is incorrect. We are proceeding under those two theories. And so today this court confronts the single most important issue facing DUI prosecutions in the state of Nevada, and that is the admissibility of blood alcohol results without retrograde extrapolation when the results are on a sample that's taken outside of 2 hours. When I first joined the Vehicular Crimes Unit 5 years ago at the DA's office, the fact that it was a concern of the prosecutors every time a sample was taken outside of 2 hours, it confused me until I began to litigate the issue, and I saw that the judges were also befuddled by the issue, and we were having inconsistent ruling from courtroom to courtroom. And so today, you know, there's two issues in front of the court. Number one, statutory interpretation of the two-hour statute, which the lower court interpreted as being a rule of evidence that excludes all blood alcohol results outside of 2 hours without retrograde. I think that's an easy thing to analyze for this court under every statutory interpretation canon, plain language or public policy. That's an incorrect interpretation, and that was clearly erroneous on the part of the lower court here. One of the more important issues is proper application of a 403 balancing analysis, the probative value versus unfair prejudice. And now, while I realize that this court could easily resolve this issue with, you know, Judge Miley's ruling just under pure statutory interpretation, that does not serve the interests of giving lower courts guidance on how to apply this 403 balancing analysis.
Mr. Moskal, I have another question then regarding that balancing test. Would you agree then, as far as the concurrence in Melcher and perhaps Justice Rose's concurrence in, I'm not going to say it, Soroka, in that when you're using that balancing test, you're not stating to this court that we should adopt something where in all circumstances an unextrapolated the unextrapolated results come in without it. So if it's closer, for example, to a 0.10, as the concurrence points out, or Justice Rose points out, the more important it is to do extrapolation back because of perhaps undue prejudice. I mean, if we were to go and with what you're saying and adopting that type of test.
Well, Your Honor, it's not a per se, it always comes in. If you look at what the Texas cases are saying, the probative value with any piece of evidence in a case, when there's not other uncontradicted evidence on an element of a crime, the probative value of anything weighing in on that element, it gets higher, it skyrockets. The more an element is in dispute, the probative value skyrockets. Now, the concerns of the Armstrong opinion with retrograde and unknown variables doesn't exist. The respondent and the defense is distracting this court from the real issue, which is we're bringing a different type of analysis and expert testimony. This is a reliable scientific calculation that can be done if you know three variables. So the concern of unfair prejudice in Armstrong, of all these unknown variables affecting retrograde, doesn't exist with the Widmark
calculation. But wouldn't you admit that the unfairness to a defendant might exist the closer they are to a 0.08 when it comes to extrapolation back? Because you have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt with an exactitude on a per se violation of a 0.08. So, for example, if I hypothetically use this case and I say the results were a 0.07 and a 0.09 on the second test, it would be unfair for the state to just throw in those numbers without explaining with extrapolation back what that meant at the time of the accident. Am I making sense? There are going to be times that you can't just throw in the numbers without an extrapolation back, wouldn't you admit?
No, I don't concede that at all. Because the analogy I made in the brief and that I made to the lower court was when you have the Widmark calculation, which shows if you know three variables, the blood alcohol content, the weight and gender of the defendant, we're not extrapolating a number back. What we're saying is he had to have consumed a certain amount of alcohol to even get to that point. And the analogy that I made in my brief was that is the same as a percipient eyewitness prior to the crash saying, I saw Mr. Obermeyer drink 8 drinks before he got into that car. Now, the same argument could be made that you're making about retrograde extrapolation saying, well, just because he drank 8 drinks doesn't mean it was actually in his bloodstream at the time unless we know his metabolism, unless we know all these other factors that the Armstrong opinion was talking about. The same goes for defendant's own admissions. I drank 3 drinks. Well, you could also say, well, that without proper retrograde extrapolation showing how much was actually in his bloodstream at the time, the evidence doesn't come in. And all of that goes to the weight of the evidence. It doesn't go to the admissibility of the evidence. And we're proceeding under two theories here, the impairment theory as well. And so when you're looking at how much a person consumed, of course that is relevant and probative in a DUI case. And this complete distraction here from the real issue is we're bringing a different type of scientific methodology here that is reliable and uncontradicted, and it's showing pre-collision consumption. And so, yes, the numbers should come in. If you're tethering it, if you're not you're not introducing just a bare, naked result saying, hey, he's a 0.09. We're saying because he's a 0.09, and let's throw some hypotheticals. He's a 0.09, he's 160 pounds, and he's a male. And based on the science that we know, that means he had to drink at least 5 drinks prior to the accident. Of course that should come in at the trial in a DUI case.
Well, wait a second. Mr. Moskow, if somebody's a 0.09, they may not have been a 0.08 at the time of the accident. That is absolutely a fact. They could be going up. So what I'm saying is it's not an absolute.
But as to impairment, Your Honor, as to the fact that they could be over 0.08, you have to look at the amount of consumption before the accident. To rule that that is unfairly prejudicial for the prosecution to bring in
evidence. That's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying. If we were to use the balancing test and adopt it, what I'm saying is, would you agree with the concurrence in Metchler that the closer you are to a 0.08 in our case, that the more important extrapolation back would have to become? Because you're charging their 0.08 at the time of driving. That's all I'm saying.
Well, you also
have the difference of what I'm saying with the concurrence versus the majority.
I do see what you're saying, but the difference in this case is we are not just introducing a blood alcohol result. The probative value is in that it tells how much consumption, at the very least, had been taken place before the accident.
I'm not disputing that, but if we make law for the state and we adopt a test, everything is fact-driven in every single case, is it not?
Yes.
Each case is different. If we made an opinion adopting a balancing test, it doesn't just apply to your case and your set of facts. That's what I'm saying.
That's correct, Your Honor. But this this scientific calculation of the Widmark and consumption goes to every case.
I'm not disputing Widmark.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt Justice Silver. I want to be clear what it is you were asking to be able to introduce with your motion in limine that the court denied. Are you just trying
Your Honor,
to...
Your Honor, I didn't say...
Sorry, are you just
Your
trying
Honor,
to...
Your Honor, at the beginning, I didn't... Your Honor, I wanted to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. I'm sorry I didn't say to clarify that in the beginning.
Okay, we'll try that. Are you just trying to introduce the blood alcohol content results, or are you saying you couldn't introduce them without the Widmark analysis? Like, what is your position? What are you trying to say we have to be able to introduce?
My position is that we would introduce the blood alcohol content and expert testimony regarding the Widmark analysis to prove consumption of a certain amount of alcohol as it pertains to the impairment theory.
And do you think the Widmark analysis is necessary? In other words, what if you didn't have the Widmark analysis and you were just trying to introduce, look, 2 hours and 10 minutes later, this is his blood alcohol content, and then here's the result on the second test. Could you introduce that without Widmark?
Well, based on the Texas cases, you could. Based on the Nevada jurisprudence and the footnote in Armstrong, I would say that we need a little bit more here in Nevada. And that's why I've gone down, I've spoken to the scientists, and we've done this in cases before. Look, when you get into retrograde extrapolation, when you get into these hearings and trials, they always devolve into a battle of the experts. One expert saying that there's no way he could be over 0.08 at the time. The other expert saying, well, we do a straight line analysis. And that goes to the weight of the evidence. The jury will hear that. But the fact that he had consumed a certain amount of alcohol, it should come in. I mean, look, you know, Justice Silver, last time I argued in front of you, you said, you know, the DUI cases get pled down when we have issues. And this evidence is so important that without it, DUI cases become difficult to prove. And
but there's a difference, Mr. Moskow, there's a difference between Widmark and the result of a opinion on Widmark. And there's a difference between extrapolation back. Those are two completely different things. And you're correct. Kind of putting them together in your argument. I'm saying they are two completely different things. I'm not talking about Widmark. I'm talking about the test under 403. And I was talking about, you know, going through that whole analysis of prejudice, because it could become prejudicial if it's close to the number. You can't just throw out a Widmark number with that when it's close to a 0.08 is my point.
Then, Your Honor, issue an opinion that says, when we proceed on the impairment theory alone, and I do abandon the per se at the time of driving theory, that my Widmark calculation and blood alcohol content should come in. Issue that opinion. But give guidance to the lower courts on how to apply a 403 analysis the way the Texas cases do. They just don't know how to apply it. They don't know how to apply this rule of evidence that needs to be applied across the board, but especially with regard to blood alcohol content results. And the lower courts need guidance on this issue. But first and foremost, the two-hour statute, please issue an opinion of statutory interpretation saying that that does not exclude blood alcohol content results. The two-hour theory of liability does not do that. I reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, if that's okay. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Goodman.
We can't hear you. You're muted.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. Well, good morning, and may it please the court. That was confusing to me, at least. I do these cases every day. Let me start off by saying there is no need for this court on a writ to revisit the Armstrong decision. Armstrong required a scientific process to relate a blood alcohol content outside of 2 hours to the time of driving. And that is the essence of what is missing from the state's argument. The state is not attempting to relate a blood alcohol content back to the time of driving. And our statutes and our theories, whether it's within 2 hours or outside of 2 hours, which we refer to as per se, 0.08 at the time of driving. It all relates back to the time of driving. And this court painfully took a lot of measures in coming up with around 13 factors in order for it to be scientifically reliable to take a blood alcohol content outside of 2 hours and relate it back to the time of driving, which is the essence of the statute. What the state is trying, well, before I get into that, let me just also say, if I can, that there is no need to change the statute. The statute is within 2 hours, that's the 2 hour theory, and that is what the state wants to do. The state can introduce a blood alcohol content now, if it's within 2 hours, and extract without having to go through the scientific process of extrapolating it back to the time of driving. So you could have a 0.10 at 1 hour and 59 minutes afterwards, and it's presumed that that's what the driver had at the time of driving. The state doesn't need to do anything more than that. What Armstrong said is that if it's beyond 2 hours, you do have to come up with a scientifically reliable methodology to relate it back to the time of driving. And the papers, the argument below and the below in district court and the papers to this court bypass that scientific process. They're saying don't use scientific reliability, which this court approved in Armstrong. Let's use a less reliable method. Let's just take this blood alcohol content that has no relationship to the time of driving, which is what the essence of the statute is, the theory of the statute, to prove somebody beyond a reasonable doubt at the time of driving. Let's just take it. We're going to bypass Armstrong, not relate it back, and just have an expert quantify, which is three requirements, as the state just got done telling you, and say, this is how many drinks that this person had to have consumed pre-stop. Before.
Well, Mr. Goodman, what if hypothetically the state only brought in impairment, okay, and they didn't charge? Let's just hypothetically say they didn't even bring in the per se, and they say they're just intoxicated to an extent, however slight. How is it then that it would not be relevant and overly prejudicial, a BAC number using Widmark? Because now you're not talking about a charge that's relating back to the time of driving. Why can't they just put in Widmark?
Well,
because it is more, it is probative to the fact that the person is intoxicated at that point.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, if you introduce the blood alcohol content.
Right. What if they just proceed under impairment? Okay. Why is that overly prejudicial? Isn't it more probative at that point that they're intoxicated using, you know, a Widmark number?
No, Your Honor, because the Widmark number, first of all, there is no evidence in the record, and everybody keeps on saying Widmark number or Widmark calculation. That's not what the state's expert said at the evidentiary hearing on it. He said there was research done on how you come up with how you simply calculate the amount of alcohol somebody would have drunk. There's just no scientific.
Well, Mr. Goodman, Mr. Goodman, your client said he had two drinks, like many defendants, and yet his numbers are 0.13. And scientifically under Widmark, that would be impossible. So isn't that now relevant to that case if we're only looking at impairment?
No, Your Honor, and if I could just explain why. Consumption, first of all, impairment has to do with the time of driving. So the whole reason why this court in Armstrong said you had to go through the scientific process to relate it back is because if you take, in the state's example, 8.2 drinks of standard drinks pre-consumption, because that's what it tested at 2 hours and 15 minutes after the accident, and you don't relate that back to the time of driving, then how is that reliable to put in front of a jury to say this person two hours and 15 minutes later had 8.2 drinks in the system, but you don't relate it back, so you don't know how many drinks were absorbed or distributed or eliminated through a system so that it goes from so it goes through the absorption process, which was the whole point of coming up with Armstrong. You just can't say to a jury, this person had 8.2 drinks at the time of testing, and therefore that's what was affecting him for purposes of impairment. You still have to relate it, still has to be scientifically connected to the time of driving. How was that person impaired? Because you're going to put in front of a jury, he had 8.2 drinks in his system 2 hours and 15 minutes later. That's the, again, that's the whole point of relating it back. And
Mr. Goodman, this is Justice Kater, can't you use, you know, the circumstantial evidence of this accident happened, he's stopped, he ends up, you know, getting treatment, getting arrested, whatever, and is tested 2+ hours later, and he has enough alcohol in his system at that time to be equivalent to 8 drinks or whatever the number is. Isn't that circumstantial evidence that he had at least that much in his system at the time of the accident?
No, Your Honor, because that's overlooking the entire scientific process and why we're doing it, and why Armstrong required it to be related back, because it has to be sufficiently tethered to individual factors at the time of driving. And when you look at the Armstrong decision, and I highlighted it on page 12 of our answer, Armstrong was concerned about the complexity of the scientific assessment of an individual actual blood alcohol level due to a wide range of both psychological and biochemical parameters unique to every individual. And then it goes on.
Mr. Goodman, doesn't that only apply if they're charging a 0.08 at time of driving? If they're only charging that they're impaired, an intoxication, however slight, then that doesn't apply, does it?
Well, Your Honor, it does, because how does the amount of consumption, how's that probative of impairment? Because you have to show subjective intoxication. That is highly prejudicial to tell a jury this person 2 hours and 15 minutes had 8.2 standard drinks without tethering it back to the time of driving.
But you can cross-examine the expert on that. How does it go to its admissibility on an impairment theory?
Mr. Goodman, I think we have a question from Justice Herndon.
Thank you, Chief Justice Hardesty. Mr. Goodman, let me circle back to the actual judge's order here that's on appeal. Do you all concede that there is nothing in the statute that limits blood alcohol draws to be within 2 hours before they're potentially admissible? Or are you taking the position that there is a mandatory 2-hour time frame, and if they're not taken within that, they are never admissible?
No, Your Honor, never taking that position. I think Judge Miley actually ruled that it was unreliable because the state was not introducing retrograde extrapolation, and it was outside of 2 hours.
Well, so I believe, hold on. Her written decision stated, quote, in the instant case, the back measurements were not taken until after the 2-hour window had ended. Therefore, the court finds the unextrapolated back results are excluded by statute. I believe she did apply a mandatory 2-hour time frame, which was in error. But also, if that's in error, then it does not appear that she engaged in any kind of probative versus prejudicial analysis to even determine the potential admissibility of the back results in this case or the Widmark analysis.
Well, I mean, in the context of the actual hearing, which I wasn't the lawyer at that point, but in reviewing the transcript, the state was making a focus, or the state focused the judge, the court, that they were not doing retrograde extrapolation. And the judge at that hearing made also a big decision that it was outside of the 2 hours. So I can't explain the actual wording of the order, but I believe it to be that it was outside of 2 hours. I don't think anybody's taking the position that there's that is excluded by statute.
Okay.
It's a theory of prosecution. And I also reserve 2 minutes.
All right, thank you.
But if I could just go back to Justices Silver's comments about that, I do believe, Your Honor, that there is a difference between alcohol consumption and effect. The focus of the statute is impairment under the influence, and that comes down to what effect did the alcohol have to impair that person's physical or mental faculties or impairment. And so just showing the amount of consumption 2 hours after the fact is not probative or relevant of subjective intoxication at the time of driving.
Mr. Goodman, this is Chris Pickering in Las Vegas. And the question I have, I want to circle back to Justice Herndon's point, which is the district court categorically states and cites 48025 for the proposition that evidence that's excluded by statute must be excluded without 48035 balancing. And then she goes on to say that the blood draw was more than 2 hours outside, and because it's statutorily excluded, she has no choice but to exclude it. And to me, that presents a much different question than what either one of you is arguing. And I wanted to ask you if you concede that that was an erroneous ruling by the district court if we accept it as her ruling.
I do, Your Honor. I'm not sure why the court drafted the order that way. I know what I read in the transcript of the hearing, which was more related to the fact the state was not using or introducing retrograde extrapolation.
Right, but what we have is the district court's written order. Admittedly, we can look at the transcript, but it seems to me this on a writ, the state's running the writ, they're saying the district court categorically excluded this evidence because it is statutorily not able to be admitted since the blood draw occurred more than 2 hours after the accident. That's the ruling, and it's here. And so then, once you get past the question of whether it's statutorily excluded, where are we? The district court needs to do the balancing, and I would like to be helpful. I appreciate the state's position and your position, but the district court didn't make any of those findings and didn't get precise on what Widmark is or how it applies in this context. I'd like your comments on what you think we should do with this case.
Well, I mean, I don't want to say it's form over substance, Your Honor, but the standard is really whether or not the district court abused her discretion.
If she committed an error of law in categorically excluding it, she abused her discretion.
I understand based on the drafting of the order, Your Honor. I don't mean to move on, but there's nothing more I can add with respect to why it was drafted that way, Your Honor. I just want to also say, going back to the earlier...
But I just want to follow up. I'm sorry. You would agree then that we should grant writ relief on that point, on the point that she ruled on?
I don't agree with the fact, Your Honor, that there's a mandatory rule to exclude blood alcohol content outside of 2 hours. I think that the Armstrong decision requires a retrograde extrapolation.
Yeah. The second piece is what is in dispute between you and your colleague, but thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just real quickly, I know the time is waning. I just want to put in perspective with respect to consumption versus effect, and that is consumption 2 hours and 15 minutes after the time of driving to show impairment at the time of driving. And it was interesting how the state used the expert at the hearing to say this correlates, the blood alcohol content 2 hours and 15 minutes later correlates to the clinical signs and symptoms caused by the alcohol's effects. And that is where you confuse the jury, Your Honor, and that's where it's misleading to the jury, regardless of my ability to cross-examine, because you're saying, here's a chart, the Dubowski chart, which I don't believe is admissible anyway, but what Mr. Moskal is trying to do is use this BAC 2 hours and 15 minutes later and have an expert say, okay, with this blood alcohol content, these are the clinical signs and symptoms that person would be experiencing at the time of driving without that scientific connection. And that's where it's misleading and confusing and unreliable. Right. I'll reserve my 50 seconds.
Sorry, Mr. Goodman, as real party in interest, you don't have any time to reserve.
Okay.
You don't have rebuttal time in the argument. If you were assuming you could make one final statement, I'll allow you to do that, but I think that concludes your argument. So if you wish to say anything further, I'll give you 30 seconds to do so, and then we'll move on to the minute or so that the state has for rebuttal.
I'll take the 30 seconds, Your Honor. And just real quickly, the other point that we didn't address that's out there is that states making that argument that there's no difference between admitting an expert saying that these are the amount of drinks for consumption versus a witness actually observing a person drinking in real time. And I would say that's all the difference in the world, because that person is observing how that individual is acting, his demeanor, whether or not he's balancing and things like that. That is probative to intoxication or impairment versus somebody saying
Thank you, Mr. Goodman. I think we understand your point and points.
Thank you.
Counsel, you have a minute 38 for rebuttal.
And Your Honor, I would implore this court to issue an opinion talking about there's more unfair prejudice if you're proceeding on the per se at the time of driving but with the impairment theory, that this is still probative evidence, and to show the lower courts that just because, look, let's talk about the concessions that were made in the lower court. You know, Roman numeral 2, if you look at the appellate appendix, page 161, the title of Roman numeral number 2 in their opposition was retrograde extrapolation is not a conditioned precedent to admission. And now at this level, I know they changed horses midstream, but now at this level, they're arguing completely that retrograde extrapolation is a conditioned precedent. So that concession has to have some weight here. And also, they also conceded Roman numeral 3, appendix 163, Armstrong may not hold that unextrapolated BAC results are unfairly or overly prejudicial, but it comes close. So those are concessions that were made below by the counsel, and now they're making the opposite arguments up here. But doesn't this court think that a proper jury instruction could also curb any unfair prejudice with regard to this? So I want to address what Mr. Goodman is talking about, the admissions and percipient witness testimony. The same arguments about alcohol not being absorbed in the system at the time of driving apply equally to a person seeing a person drink. Just because they drank 8 beers in front of me doesn't mean it was in their system at the time of driving. It applies with equal force to a defendant's admission. I had 3 drinks before the crash, but it wasn't in my system. It was just in my stomach. You know, my caloric sphincter hadn't opened yet. And those admissions, do we need retrograde to get all of that in? Or is this going to be analogized by defense attorneys to say, we're keeping out the admissions, we're keeping out percipient witness testimony, and we're keeping out the BAC test result based on the logical reasoning of the Obermeyer opinion?
Justice Hardesty, may I have your indulgence for a question of the state?
Yes, of course. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. We have this order we've been talking about where she categorically excludes it, and you have opposing counsel conceding that's erroneous. There is no statutory exclusion. What would you have us do with this record? I understand you would like a definitive ruling from us, but we don't have the district court's balancing of the Rule 403 or 48035, relevance versus probative value versus prejudice, and we don't have the benefit of that. That's entrusted to the district court in the first instance, and that concerns me. I'd like your thoughts on that briefly.
Number one, you didn't have Judge Miley's reasoning in the Armstrong opinion. And this court saw that it was an issue and issued the opinion anyway and reached and said this might have been her reasoning. But I want to talk about this. The concession made below, too, is that they conceded that it was the most probative piece of evidence in the case. They conceded that below. They said there's a temporal restriction, and Judge Miley ruled upon that basis. They conceded
but you would then have us. excuse me, you would have us mandate on an extraordinary writ that the district court admit this evidence. Is that right? That's what you're asking us to do?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Any further questions from justices?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you very much, counsel, for your arguments today and your briefing. We appreciate it. The case will stand.